Shalom Aleichem, everyone. We are coming upon Sukkos, if you have not noticed yet. So what I would like to do is discuss, it's halacha, as we usually do, but it is a lot of history as well. I think in the past, we have discussed why we have to have a certain type of esrogim, and yichus of esrogim, and genealogy, grafting, and you know why it makes a difference what your esrog is, and where it's from, and why the name of the box matters. What I'd like to discuss is a little bit of the history of the Esrogim of Eretz Yisrael. It is a very interesting story, I think, and I think it enhances a bit of flavor for when a person is looking. Now, again, if by now a person doesn't have their Esrog, still have time, but, you know, it's getting close, and hopefully give us a better appreciation for where the Esrog got to where it is nowadays, and what exactly is going on in all those different colored boxes that they're selling at the store. So let's start. It would seem that certainly Klal Yisrael did not take Lulav and Esrog until they got to Eretz Yisrael because there was no Dal and Minim in the desert. And it makes sense that after the second Beis HaMikdash, they continued to get Esrogim from Eretz Yisrael because they probably kept replanting Esrogim in Eretz Yisrael. We see this in the Gemara that discusses Esrogim as they connect to the laws of the land of Israel. Really, obviously, Esrogim were around from Eretz Yisrael after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We also have the famous letter that's in front of you of Bar Kochva from 134, where he asks for the Dal Minim to be brought from Ein Gedi. Again, so there's always been Esrogim in Eretz Yisrael, around Eretz Yisrael, and that is certainly important. Now, until the Spanish expulsion, we don't really find any mention to where people got their Esrogim from. We don't know exactly, you know, where Rashi got their Esrogim from, where the Balei Tosfos got their Esrogim from, or things like that. The Yeshuas Malko writes in Arachaim and Simon Memvav, this is one of the great Achronim in the 1800s, he says that he has a tradition of the Beis Yosef, the Arizal, the Ramach, Ramosha Cordovero, used Esrogim from Eretz Yisrael, and they had a Mesorah regarding which Esrog was which. In the Tshuvas of the Ma'bid in Chelek Gimel, he says that when he came to Tzfas in 1513, there were orchards and gardens full of Esrogim. And the Tshuvas of Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi and Simon Samach Beis writes that in Tzfas they would set a price with the non-Jews who own the orchards and go and cut the Esrogim that were needed for that upcoming Sukkos. Very good. The Avnei Ezer writes in Choshen Mishpat and Simon Kuftes Vav that the Esrogim Eretz Yisrael, the Esrogim of the land of Israel, have no history of being Murkav. They were never grafted. Again, a few years ago we discussed why grafting is an issue, but we're not going to get into that right now. Since Gedolei Yisrael lived there for generations, never raised an issue about their yichus, nobody ever mentioned a problem regarding the Esrogim in Eretz Yisrael. And when the Jews didn't inhabit Eretz Yisrael, we aren't worried about Murkav, the grafting of an Esrog, because there would have been no reason for anyone to want to graft an Esrog. Nobody needs an Esrog besides the Jews. Why would anybody want to go and graft a lemon with an Esrog, except a Jew? And if there are no Jews there, what benefit would anybody get? The Bikurei Shmuel has a letter from Rav Mordechai Gimpel Yaffe, who I think is the uncle of Rav Kook, who noted that the Esrogim of Eretz Yisrael have a Mesorah from earlier generations, and Rav Meir Arbach, we'll discuss him later on in the Tshuvas Nefesh Chaya, wrote that the Esrogim of Eretz Yisrael have a Mesorah, and they are Muchsak, they are known to be good for hundreds of years, and he cites Rav Shmuel Heller, who was the Rav of Tzfas in the 1840s, who said that the Esrogim that grew outside of Tzfas are Muchsak, they are known to be kosher from the time of the Beis Yosef. So, great. What's so great about Tzfas, by the way? Because Tzfas has two things you need for Esrogim. A lot of sun and water. So Tzfas is a great place to grow Esrogim. Okay, so we know that the assumption was that the Esrogim after the Churban Beis HaMikdash until pre-modern times were good. Fine. Then what happened in pre-modern times? In the 1830s, the Yishuv HaYashan begins in Eretz Yisrael. The religious settlers begin to come from Europe. And in 1860, we find that Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, the great lover of Tzion, is trying to get people to move to Eretz Yisrael, and he wants a parnassa for the Jews. So what are the Jews supposed to do to make parnassa in Eretz Yisrael? So he starts teaching people to plant with his Mikveh Yisrael Society, and he tries to get people to plant Esrogim because it will create a parnassa for them, and you'll have money at the end of the day. Up until the early 1800s, all of the Esrogim were owned by Arabs and grown in cities of Shechem, and Tzfas, and Tveria, and Al-Fam, Wadi Kalt, all different places around Yerushalayim. They were grown wild, and they didn't look very pretty at all. They could grow up to 10 pounds. They never had a pitum, people looking for a pitum on the esrogim. Nobody was looking for a pitum on an esrog in the 1800s. And the Arab farmers called these types of esrogim baladi esrogim, or native, or Palestinian esrogim. So the first term we need to remember is the term of baladi. Baladi esrogim are the original esrogim that were native to Eretz Yisrael. This distinguished them from the esrogim of Corfu, of Greece, or of Parga, that were planted in Yafo. The Jews described the esrogim of Eretz Yisrael as Yari, Peri, Wild, Kadmoni. They weren't the most beautiful esrogim, physically. I'm sure they were very holy spiritually, but not so much physically. In the Sefer Tzvuos Haaretz, it writes that in 1844, there was no widespread grafting of esrogim in Eretz Yisrael. Just as a side point, how did esrogim of Greece get into Eretz Yisrael? Because during the reign of Napoleon, there was a blockade on Italy. And in Italy, where people were getting esrogim from for hundreds of years, there was a problem. So people said they could get esrogim from Greece instead. So the Jews of Greece said that they had a Masorah that they called the Corfu esrogim, were used for centuries, and that's what they started selling. And the sellers from Italy didn't want to lose out on business, so they started claiming that the Corfu Greece esrogim were murkav, they were grafted, and that's a whole discussion for another time. But let's focus more on Eretz Yisrael. So again, we're in the middle of the 1800s. Rav Yaakov Sapir was a Jewish journalist, so he writes in Halvanon in Tavshin Lamed Ches that in 1850, a box of esrogim from Corfu with a pitom were sent by the rabbi of Corfu, Rav Yehuda Bibas, to the Rishon Lezion, the Sfarik Chief Rabbi, Rav Chaim Avraham Gagin of Yerushalayim. And after Sukkot in 1850, the seeds were planted in Yafo, and a new type of esrog was introduced to Eretz Yisrael in 1850. 10 years later, Moses Montefiore, of Montefiore fame, bought the orchard to give a parnassa to the Jews of Yafo so they could make money. And these esrogim became known as the ordaying esrog. We'll talk about the ordaying esrog much later on. The seeds spread to start other orchards, and they become the most popular esrogim in Eretz Yisrael. And they had a pitom, and they were gorgeous, just like the esrogim of Corfu, because they came from Corfu. In 1873, Rav Chaim Eliezer Wax, the Nefesh Chaya, bought land in Kfar Chitin, which is near Tveria, and he planted 600 trees from the original Baladi Esrogim that dated back all the way to the Beis Yosef from the 1500s. And by 1875, 2 years later, he harvested 600 Esrogim, and by 1883, they had 40,000 Esrogim they would send all over the world. It was a very short amount of time to make a lot of money. But he saw that it's wonderful that he had his natural esrogim that were baladi, but he could not compete with the beautiful esrogim or the Corfu or the Corfu slash Yafo esrogim. There was no competition there. Their esrogim were much nicer. So in 1876, the next year, the Corfu Yafo esrog started showing up on the market. And the Baladi merchants started saying that the Yafo ones were murkav, they were grafted. And the murkav and the Yafo merchants started saying that the Baladi one was no good because it didn't have a pitom. And that was the fight. Yours are grafted, yours doesn't have a pitom. In the public letters, the Baladi merchants, the one who were selling the native esrogim, would call their opponents the Yevanim HaRishayim, the evil Greeks, like in the days of Hanukkah. It got pretty nasty. So in response, the Badatz of Yerushalayim, the Basin of Yerushalayim, led by the Gaon of Shmuel Salant, who you have a picture in front of you, went to check at the groves of Yafo, and he sent three experts, and they saw signs of grafting with the sweet lemon. And they also reported that they found that no grafting was in any of the Baladi orchards. The ugly natural esrogim had no grafting whatsoever. So the Basin decided to allow the esrogim of Yafo to exist if they uprooted the trees that were grafted, and they placed all the remaining trees under the supervision of the Badatz. And they also decided to only give their hashgacha if Rav Meir Arbach, the co-rabbi of Yerushalayim, would agree to their decision. So now, the Yafo, Corfu, Esrogim are hanging in the balance. In a letter to the Badatz, Rav Meir Arbach said that he would not support them, since the Esrogim of Yafo came from Toldos Murkav, a fruit that grows on an esrog tree that was planted from a branch or a seed that came from a Murkav tree. There was a little bit of Murkav, of grafting involved. However, soon afterwards, in 1878, 3 weeks before Rav Meir Orbach dies, the Badatz printed a psak with the signature of Rav Meir Orbach supporting the Estrogim of Yafa. That winter, he was too ill to be involved in any communal matters, but his signature appeared on the Badatz psak, and the Badatz brings the son of Rav Meir to testify that it was the signature of his father. And as a result, the Estrogim of Yafo became mutter for the general public in Eretz Yisrael. The baladi trees of Rav Chaim Elazar wax were cut down to their stump, and on top were grafted branches from Corfu. So now you have a beautiful Estrog with a pitom and a questionable yichus. And now all of Eretz Yisrael is upside down. We used to have Estrogim with a great yichus, and we knew they were 100% Estrogim. And now, everything's upside down. We don't know what to do at the end of the day. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so we're left in this kind of in-between state of what to do with the Estrogim, and now there's no, by the end of the 1800s, there are no cultivated baladi natural Estrogim around Eretz Yisrael. There are natural Estrogim, but they're not being cultivated in orchards for sale. So there's a bit of confusion. Let's turn now to what happened going forward. We're going to first talk about the Maharil Diskin, then we'll talk about the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook, and what exactly is going on nowadays in Eretz Yisrael. The first one to get involved, or supposedly to get involved, we don't really have a record, is the Maharil Diskin, Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin, who you have a picture of in front of you, planting a specific tree. We don't have any record of him planting a specific tree, but we know from the family of the Briskerov that the Briskerov felt that the Estrogim that were miyuchas, that were attributed to the Maharil Diskin, were the best Estrogim around. There's a similar statement from the Chazon Ish, recorded in the Sefer Zecher LeDavid. The Beis Halevi apparently asked the Maharil Diskin to figure out what's going on with the Estrogim in Eretz Yisrael. And the Maharil Diskin was very makbid, very careful to use Estrogim from trees that had a Masorah going back hundreds of years. And the places of these Estrogim remained free of Harkava. There was no grafting, even after the grafting became common. However, it is not clear exactly what he accomplished and what he found out. Most of the Masorah is based on rumor and not fact, and in addition, all the original trees about which there were rumors have all died. So we know there's something about the Maharil Diskin, but we don't exactly know what trees we're talking about. I'm going to start dropping a few names that you may have seen on the Esrog boxes that you buy. The first is the Braverman or the Braverman Esrog. It's the oldest to have been traced to a reliable source. It comes from Rav Zerach Ruvain Braverman, whose gravestone you have in front of you on the sheets. We don't have any pictures of him, so that's the best I could do. And he's one of the closest students to the Maharil Diskin. In his son's yard in 1894, there was a tree from Petach Tikva that was planted from a seed that came from an esrog that was used by the Maharil Diskin. The family claims that the esrog came from the wild trees of Shechem, which we mentioned before. Now, the original tree is no longer alive. I think it died around 1937. Okay. And also around the same time, we have the Braverman Kivalevitz Esrog, which came from a tree in the Wadi Kelt near Yericho. The Kivalevitz family took the Esrog seeds from a tree in a location that was known that the Maharil Diskin took his Esrog from. The tree was then planted in Bat Yam, and those seeds ended up in Beis Meir, and those seeds ended up in Komimius, and also in Kfar Saba. And the tree made its way all over Eretz Yisrael. There are even Kivavelitz Estrogim in California that are grown in California that came from Kfar Saba. So the Braverman Kivavelitz Estrog has made its way around, and you will find such labels around the Estrogim being sold. I think we are all familiar with Chazon Ish Estrogim. Even if we don't know any other brand names, and we don't know anything about Teimani or all different types of, you know, brands, I think we all know that there's something about the Chazon Ish's Estrog. So what is that? When the Chazon Ish arrived in Eretz Yisrael in 1933, he started looking for Estrogim right away. Everything we know going forward about the Chazon Ish is 100% rumor. There's nothing clear about it. Why was he makbid on an Estrog, but he never recorded any details about the Estrog? That's a good question that nobody asked, but it is a good question to think about. If we know the Chazon Ish was so obsessed with these Estrogim, why didn't he ever write about it? I'm not sure. His first sukkahs in 1933, he took a Braverman Estrog because that was the Estrog of the Maharil Diskin. The next summer, or according to another story in 1945, he was in Tzfas, and he was inspecting these wild, non-grafted esrogim. And on that trip with him was Rav Chaim Halperin. And the Chazon Ish gave him an esrog to plant. And he said, you go take care of this. And from that esrog came the Halperin line of esrogim, which you can see sold with boxes all over the world, the Halperin esrogim. And later the Chazon Ish took seeds from an esrog he used on Sukkos, and he gave it to, as the famous story goes, Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, who you have in front of you, and he told him to plant it. And when the Chazon Ish was asked how he knew the esrog wasn't morkav, it wasn't grafted, he said, I have such a mesorah. I know. We don't know the exact source of the seeds that he gave to Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, but this is the famous Lefkowitz Chazon Ish esrog that is sold as well. However, I brought for you, on the source sheets in front of you, a piece from the Pe'er Hador, the multi-volume biography of the Chazon Ish, which is considered to be of substantial resource. So in volume 2, we see that soon after the Chazon Ish had second thoughts about his source, he writes as follows, Nodati Meharkava Chadasha, I heard about a new grafting. Shemarkivim Esrog Min Hashuk Be'esrog Hayar. They're grafting the new esrogim with the natural esrogim. Vizakorin bilti morkov. It's called, I feel this is, they think that it's not grafted. Vosin kein al pi haras harav kuk. And it's under the auspices of Rav Kuk. Veraisi esrogim elu v'chazusin k'mo shalano. I see that they look similar to our esrogim. V'al piza batla hatvius ayin shes samachti alav. And because now I cannot tell the difference between the esrogim I used and now these new esrogim, no one can ever rely on telling whether it's grafted simply by sight. Ulezos avakesh lekabel esrog meoso aish, and therefore I'm going to get an esrog from this guy. Mekabel chosham shon I get every single year. Shein behem harkava, I know that this guy has good esrogim. Shamin achar klal uklal. Now, what's the Chazon Ish talking about? What was the basis of his tfias ayin that he was looking at the esrogim and looking, basing them by sight? And what does that have to do with Rav Kuk? And if there's something wrong with his visual, you know, testimony, then why did he still use Halperin's esrog? And who's Oso Aish? What's going on over here? What's the Chazon Ish writing about? So we need a bit of background. When Rav Kuk came to Eretz Yisrael, he saw that there was already a heter in place to use the esrogim of Yafo to be grown on the trees that were told us Murkav, that came from other grafted trees. But he saw what was happening, that the farmers were grafting esrogim onto sour oranges as its rootstock, right? The way you graft is you have a strong rootstock that you know is going to be able to withstand the weather and not needing so much water and grow strong. And you take your esrog and you graft it onto the rootstock of the sour orange. The problem had become so bad that the farmers didn't know any other way to grow esrogim. They only knew how to grow esrogim by cheating. That was the only way they knew how to do it. The issue had become worldwide, and it was difficult to find an esrog that was bilti morkav, that wasn't being grafted. The demand in Eretz Yisrael was for bilti morkav. In Eretz Yisrael, the Jews wanted very firm, no grafted esrogs. But in Chutz La'aretz, nobody really cared about what was on the inside. It was more about what was on the outside. It's not a statement of Chutz La'aretz. It was just the way things were. And this led to widespread grafting to keep up with the market. Because the Jews in America, and the Jews in England, and the Jews in Poland, they wanted nice-looking esrogim. They didn't care so much about where it came from. And that was fueling the market for these questionable esrogim. So in response, Rav Kuk wrote a sefer called Pri Eitz Hadar, where he explained that an esrog morkav, a grafted morkav, is pasul, and why it's pasul. And he continued that the location cannot tell you if an esrog is morkav or not anymore. That whole thing about, like, I have a place where I know they grow, that they're good, Rav Kuk says, it's ridiculous, it doesn't work. Even if it comes from a place that has muchzak of a mesorah, that it has a good tradition of having good esrogim, it doesn't tell you anything since an esrog tree dies every 10 years. And the simanim that tell you if something is not morkav is only if something is suffig morkav, if I'm unsure. But it cannot allow an esrog that is certainly morkav. If I know for sure that this esrog came from a sour orange, who cares? He was opposed to morkav at all, and this famous shuva, the Beis Ephraim that we discussed a number of years ago, that allowed toldos morkav. So Rav Kuk says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about esrogim? The whole thing stinks. So Rav Kuk understood that it was hard to grow esrogim because the esrog trees weren't strong and that the esrogim of Eretz Yisrael were not as beautiful as the esrogim of Corfu. So we introduce something called Harkava Kshera, kosher grafting. What does that mean? He created a hechsher like the OU, called Agudas Pri Eitz Hadar. In the picture that you have in the slides in front of you, those are farmers farming under Rav Kook's hechsher. There's a lot of information about Rav Kook's plisor. We have a lot of the letters are on the Zionist Archive website, and there's a lot of information about it over there. And Rav Kook wanted to grow Bilti Murkav of very high quality, non-grafted of good quality, that had a pitom and were beautiful. So where are these magical lists going to come from? He would give a hechsher to all growers who joined his organization, and he wrote letters that you have in front of you explaining the issue of Murkav and why people should join his group. Rav Kook's chiddush was as follows. He said, I could essentially put the esrog into a mikvah. I can kasher the esrog. How do I do that? I can cleanse the toldos Murkav esrog of its grafting by grafting Korfu toldos Murkav onto a rootstock that was 100% Murkav baladi. I'm going to take the esrog that came from Korfu in Yafo, and we're going to graft it onto a baladi, a natural esrog rootstock. Such an esrog would be pretty like Korfu and stronger. A Murkav, says Rav Kook, is not a new species of esrog. It's an esrog with some non-esrog genetic material. That's how Rav Kook viewed a grafted esrog. It's an esrog. It just has some bad DNA in it. And by grafting this Murkav, this grafted esrog, onto a never-grafted rootstock, I can be mevatel, the non-esrog genetic material. I can flush it out by taking the Yafo Korfu esrog and putting it onto a natural esrog rootstock. I can flush out the bad grafted DNA, says Rav Kook, essentially being more machmer than the badatz of the Eidach Haredes, and only allowing a toldos Murkav combined with a never Murkav. I take a partially grafted with a never grafted, and I flush out the grafted DNA. The Chazon Ish did not like this. The Chazon Ish is writing, and he's saying as follows, that a Murkav is not what Rav Kook thinks it is. He has a existential disagreement about what it means to have a grafted esrog. A grafted esrog is not a mixture of esrog and lemon. That's not what it is. It's a new species, says the Chazon Ish. It's a third thing. If you open up and you look with your halachic glasses at a grafted esrog, it's not a mixture of lemon and esrog. It's a third thing that didn't exist before. Therefore, says the Chazon Ish, when I plant the seeds of a Murkav, of a grafted esrog, it's not an esrog at all. A toldos Murkav, even many generations later, will not be an esrog. He also didn't agree that you could kasher an esrog by putting it through the mikvah of grafting it onto a natural tree. And this was also the opinion of Meir Orbach, who initially refused to allow the esrog Yafo for this reason. And this is recorded at length by Rav Shmuel Salant in a conversation he had with Meir Orbach and the Torah of Rav Shmuel Salant and Chelek Aleph as well. And once the Chazon Ish heard that Rav Kook created an esrog with good simanim, that it looked right, but it came from Murkav, but it came essentially from a grafted place, he lost all confidence in looking at an esrog to see if it had a good yichas, and he threw up his hands and said, there's nothing to do. You can't do anything anymore. You can't look at an esrog and know anything about it. You can only rely on testimony that this esrog came from a good place, and that's what we're left with. And that is what we're sitting with now in Eretz Yisrael. That's the situation. Only relying essentially on where this esrog came from at the end of the day. So let's discuss different types of esrogim and different things on the box. Well, first let's talk about ordeng badatz. We mentioned it before. Ordeng badatz is probably the most common Israeli esrog available today, and it's exported worldwide. It is also the nicest looking of all esrogim, and the variety that is most often has a pitom. This was started by Rav Shraga Feivel Ordeng. He planted a pardes in Chadera in around 1926. We're not sure of the source of the variety, but we think it came from one of the original Baladi esrogim. Rav Sofer shows in his sefer that we mentioned before that the esrog of Yafa was grafted onto the original Baladi seedlings, and when the Chazon Ish was asked if the ordained esrog was kosher, he would say yes, for making compote. That's how he felt about it. And he was asked whether a brachan can be made on such an esrog. He would say, yes, bari priyaitz. There's another story that's told of Rav Ordain coming to the Chazon Ish and asking if he may graft the esrog trees in a specific way. And the Chazon Ish discussed it with him. And then after he left, the Chazon Ish turned to the guy next to him and said, it's shoyn achar ha-maisa. He's asking me this because he already did it. He's not asking for my permission. He's asking because he did it and he wants me to say it's okay. There's a whole piece about this in the Kovetz Yishurim and Lama Gimel as well. And that's some of the things about the Ordain Esrog. So let's go to some of the names you may see in the box. There's the Antman Esrog. The Antman Esrogim were started by Mati and Arya Antman. They came to Eretz Yisrael around 70 years ago. And they have a Hechsher. This is an Ordain Esrog under Yaakov Meir Stern. And again, that's one type of Esrog as well. In addition, I'm not giving you my feelings about the Esrogim. I'm just telling you the facts on the ground. Another type of popular Esrogim are Kirshenbaum Esrogim. Kirshenbaum Esrogim are grown near Rehovot. That was planted also around 70 years ago. The Kirshenbaum Esrogim are very famous as well for their quality and how they look and how they're grown. I think the guy runs is Chagai Kirshenbaum. He's like the fifth generation. And as well, they're considered to be very fine quality yichus of Esrogim in addition. There are Luria Esrogim by Menachem Luria. He has a pardes that comes from the Levavitz branch that that we mentioned before as well. His branch comes from the Calavaria that came over from Italy. There is Esroge Shalumai, those as well come also very beautiful Esrogim as well. They come from a different line as well of Esrogim. There's Braverman Esrogim that we spoke about before from the Maral Diskin. There's Halpin Friedman, which we spoke before as well. There's Lefkowitz Esrogim that we mentioned before, Vichil Michal Lefkowitz. There's Kivalevitz that we mentioned before as well that comes from that line, again, from coming from Petach Tikva and Bat Yam that made it all the way to California. And then there's Esroge Gross. Esroge Gross are also around 1927 as well. And those Esrogim come from the Gross family. The story is that they're considered to be very beautiful as well, very nice, very clean, with a very nice yichus as well. And that's under the Hechsher of Adatz Yerushalayim. But again, they're also ordaining Esrogim, and the Chazon Ish questioned them as well. Some people ask sometimes about Charlap Esrogim. My understanding is that they're very popular. My understanding is that Charlap Esrogim are not a yichus. They're not a brand of Esrogim. They are a distributor. They're not telling you anything about the yichus of the Esrogim. They're simply distributing the Esrogim. I don't know so much about exactly. But these are the types of names, and this is what's going on the different boxes at the end of the day, hopefully giving us a great understanding of what we're buying going forward.